Welcome to the Morning Philip series, co-sponsored with the Bush Foundation and the NUMAD Group, hosted here at the Garage. The purpose of the Morning Philip series is to discuss philanthropy, civil society, and community. It is an opportunity to have a conversation with good people, doing good things creatively and collaboratively. The format is a conversation, not a presentation, a dialogue, not a pitch, two chairs, a table, and a community of interested people. And today we are pleased to have with us a person recognized nationally as a leader in development and creating sustainable mixed-use space that spurs economic development. The NUMAD Group would like to extend a special thanks to the Cheeseman Center for Sound, Stock Growers Association for additional chairs, Scott Sumner with Sumner Law for brewing beer or brewing coffee.
Oh, Lord, the truth will out.
Alice Bailey for hanging her artwork.
Tremendous work.
Jackalope for setup. We want to thank the members of the Garage for letting us use your office, the Bush Foundation, and for everyone here for joining us at 7 a.m. Please join us on Facebook, engage in the conversation at hashtag MorningPhilip. Now, with all of that, please join me in welcoming ArtSpace President Kelly Lindquist.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all so much. Is this working fine? Can you all hear me? I guess it's the real deal. Good. So, what a pleasure to be here in Rapid City again. I had nice conversations with folks yesterday. Just a quick introduction about me in Rapid City. I've been to Rapid City many, many times since I was a little kid. My family used to take me camping through the Badlands and the Black Hills, and we always stopped in Rapid to stock up and have some fun. And then we'd go on to Devil's Tower and then over to Yellowstone. And that got in my blood, so I spend a lot of time now with friends camping out in the primitive areas of the Badlands and having fun in the Black Hills. And now I have friends in the Rapid City area that I can visit. So it's a place that I have come to often through the years. So it's a pleasure to be here again. I'll quickly say the mission of ArtSpace Projects. We are a nonprofit real estate developer for the arts, and our mission is simply to create, foster, and preserve affordable and sustainable space for artists and arts organizations. And we were founded about 40 years ago. And the first 10 or so years or 8 years of ArtSpace's life was a one-person operation that worked with artists in the Minneapolis Warehouse District to find temporary space in the Minneapolis Warehouse District. So if you can imagine, it was more like an artist brokerage where the artist would come to this one person, my predecessor. She would hand them papers that would allow them to contact building owners, and then they would get temporary space in the Minneapolis Warehouse District. The story that fits in here into why art space is important is that those artists, it's about the artists, not about art space, those artists, when in the work that they were doing, all of a sudden a lot of people are coming to what was before that a very scary area of town. Now a lot of people, even families, were coming to see artists work and to see the wonderful things the artists were creating, the plays. I myself was going to these plays, to these art shows in the late 70s and early 80s in areas of the city that none of us had ever been to before. Well, artists attract economic development, so that is a given. So over time, really cool coffee shops, restaurants, those of you who know Minneapolis, New French Cafe, the Loon Cafe, these are all just spectacular spaces to go to, kind of exciting, a little scary. It's hilarious now because now it's kind of the center of gravity for the city of Minneapolis. But back then, it was really something. Well, eventually, all of these architecture firms and all raised the prices so much that the building owners evicted all the artists. So ArtSpace was about to close in 86, and there were like four or five great artist board members. They're very sweet. My predecessor left, so there's really, the organization had no money. ArtSpace never dreamt of owning property. And so they're about to close, and they said, let's see if we can find someone, some idiot foolish enough, I'm just going to go there, let's see if everyone's awake, who was going to leave the Guthrie Theater and just a terrific job that he had there, and run this organization with no employees, no land, no money, a tiny little office with a broken window, and that was me. So that's what I did. I really wanted to. I knew a lot of artists. I'd already been helping artists find space. I don't know why that was in my blood. I wanted to do that. I wanted artists to have cool working spots. So I got to know the city pretty well and St. Paul. So I came in with a new idea. Let's change ArtSpace into a nonprofit real estate developer for the arts. Let's change us so that we can, as a nonprofit, can develop and own space where artists can permanently do their work. They can exhibit, they can conduct business, they can perform, they can live and work. This is we want to have permanent nodes of artist activity and enclaves that will not go away because ArtSpace will never sell their buildings, that permanently attract the economic development and good community revitalization that happens around our buildings. And in some ways, that was a guess, but it really wasn't a guess on my part. I've been lucky to go to school in London when I was a kid for a while, and I had spent some time in New York. I could see how the artist activity was attracting really great, what we now call funky, terrific kind of spaces that creative people like to hang around, and communities all across the United States want to have these creative people. So that is a quick look at how things grow. If you fast forward then 30 years, I now have altogether different divisions, so it's more than what's on your document there. I have about 90 employees around the United States, and we own and operate 41 buildings. That's more than that on that paper, that are fully operating. All of our buildings are full. That includes about 2 million square feet of non-residential space, so space like this. That we own and operate in communities like Reno, Nevada, Houston, Fort Lauderdale, New York, Fergus Falls, Minnesota, just communities all over the United States of large and small, Waukegan, Elgin, Seattle. And these buildings, the rents are kept artificially low. Some of them are just places where artists work and create their art. Others are where they conduct their business, they have their offices, and others are where they do both. And those are my favorite ones, mixed-use buildings where there are artists live-work buildings, live-work spaces up above. I usually like to do 60 to 80 really big spaces, so they aren't, even though it's affordable housing, they're about twice the size of your normal affordable housing spaces, so that the artists can have a family but also create their work there. And then on the main floor, we will have all different kinds of community space that depends upon the community in which we are working. So that gives a quick look at what ArtSpace does. We have 15 more projects that are what we call in the pipeline, that are moving toward completion across the United States. And these great employees that I have, most of them live in Minnesota, but they're really scattered all over the United States, are working, doing just great work and community-based work to create these nonprofit centers for the art that ArtSpace as an organization still owns and operates. And so all of our properties are rental properties for artists. That's kind of a quick early morning look at ArtSpace.
Thank you, Kelly, for giving us the context. Let's unpack that a little bit. So the idea of art, low-income housing and development, you helped create this idea, or you saw this opportunity.
Saw the opportunity, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit more about how you put those three things together? Because I'll say that a lot of times low-income housing, it seems, is talked about.
Right.
The arts are talked about, and economic development. But you put them together.
Yes, definitely.
Very consciously.
Yes. Yeah, and with a sense of celebration, I always say. So these things can all work together. And a theme that I have, and I've already heard from a lot of you, you already understand this, many of you, that all of these types of things, it can include almost all work that's being done in communities today, can be woven together a little bit more, and I'm all for that. So just to stick to the arts-based vision, the affordable housing that we do for low-income artists and their families does use regular affordable housing financing tools. And we are the first in the country to use low-income housing tax credits for artists. We very legally, the U.S. government has very much approved that we create affordable housing spaces across the United States where we have preference for artists. We believe and we celebrate the fact that that these artists will attract economic development. Now, a lot of the creative community dislikes economic development. They go, oh, that restaurant's moving next door, and that's going to ruin our space because that means they don't have control of that space. What ArtSpace does is, as a nonprofit, we will build spaces where we want the restaurants to move next door. We want cool things that that neighborhood or that business community want there. We want too, because we know it'll never cause the artists or creativity in our buildings to be evicted. So we weave economic development into our approach to communities all the time. And sometimes we go to communities and say, or neighborhoods where we're doing projects and say, please take a couple years to get control of what will happen in your neighborhood. Things will happen here. You can put guidelines in now to manage so that you as a neighborhood group or as a downtown business group can control what is attracted here. So I'm talking about the economic development part. ArtSpace also has an impact on that about what do we attract and bring into the main floors of our buildings. What kind of energy is that? Sometimes we work with distinct local cultures that are around buildings that we create and make sure that they have very affordable space to sell their work, as we did up in Minot with the Turtle Mountain Tribal Arts Association, where they can sell their tremendous artwork that they're doing up in Turtle Mountain, they can now sell right in downtown Minot in our building. That's one way of doing it. We also, we love the arts itself. We love art for art's sake. That's beautiful. We also love artists that are community-based, that are going out in the community lot and get involved in education. I love it when there are school buses in front of our buildings. I love it when city planners have their meetings in our buildings with artists attending. I love it when our artists, now they have a safe place where they can live and work. I love it when they get elected to be council members. I mean, now they can really participate in the community. I love it when the artists get involved in sports activities in the community. So I'm trying to break down all these barriers and make sure that we as an American culture see how deeply the arts are actually embedded in our communities. They're already there. It's all blossoming. You know, as long as we kind of reach out and help each other a little bit, it really helps the whole community rise in its civic activities.
Kelly, when you have done
this... I promise not to answer so long. God, I'm not having some more water.
When you started this, it was an advocacy group. When you took...
Yeah.
And you led it into this direction. Why keep it as a nonprofit?
Yeah, because it really is a nonprofit. The mission of ArtSpace causes us to forcefully keep the rents in our buildings low. You can imagine that. We have spectacular buildings in New York City and in Chicago and Houston, and we have 5 buildings in Seattle area, gorgeous spaces in California. These are, and now very hot, 20 years later, very hot spaces in St. Paul and Minneapolis, for example. These spaces are worth a lot of money. The ArtSpace board that I've pulled together, so now I have 40 board members from across the United States. Many of them are attorneys and good neighborhood leaders, artists, donors that are interested in the type of work that we do, a lot of bankers. We're very dedicated to keeping the rents artificially low so that the creative community, the working artist, this key to my joy of working at ArtSpace is that those two words. It's the working artist getting her or his feet on the ground, getting a start in the work that they're doing, and giving back to the community as they're growing within the art system. We want to make sure that these folks all have a chance forever. So there's not a for-profit whenever I partner with a for-profit developer, many of whom are on my board of directors, and I love for-profit developers, is their goal after 10 or 15 years is, well, I'd like to get a little money from this for my kids. Well, that's totally cool. That's just not art space. They shouldn't partner with us. And so we've learned over 30 years just not to do that, because ours is a permanent deal. All the money that we make from it is put back into that building or put into the next building that we do. We end every year, although we have a $20 million year annual budget now, $20 million. So that's a lot of money. We own what is calculated about $800 million worth of property across the United States that the Art Space Board owns. We end every year just barely in the black, because we spend our money on the cause of keeping the artists' rents low and building new buildings that serve new creative communities.
Kelly, as we talk about these communities, is there a city or a community that you can think of that has flourished without the arts?
Well, although I'm sure I can think of cities that have flourished without promoting the arts are everywhere. It would be saying like flourishing without athletics. I mean, athletics are everywhere, but maybe they don't highlight athletics. So I'm trying to think. See, the United States has really changed over the last 20 years, I have to say, and I honestly feel that art space is part of that vanguard of change. We are written into many, many planning documents and congressional documents across the United States because we are sort of the forefront of this really works. So I've had for the first 10 or 15 years, very hard conversations with city leaders that were saying, oh, we think artists are itinerant. We think artists are better when they're kind of wandering from space to space and don't really know where to land. And I would, besides doing this, I would just go, okay, let's talk this through. They're human beings. They want to have families. They'd like to have a space to put their roots. If they aren't wandering about, they can spend more time on their artwork. They can get more involved in the community. The argument about creating these permanent spaces is huge. And little by little, the country has really gone for it. I don't have to argue that as much as I used to 20 or 30 years ago. Thinking of a place that I think is cool where I don't immediately think of the arts is pretty hard for me. Do you have a suggestion? Because I think Santa Fe, I think Houston, by the way, is rich in arts. I think Rapid City is really great in the arts, and I hope that you all realize these gems that you have everywhere here, and many of the leaders like Peter Strong and the First People's Fund, but also the great Dahl Arts Center and the Performing Arts Center. I know there are many more, so I shouldn't start naming. So that comes to mind for Rapid City as well. So that's my answer. I think the arts are everywhere. I think the United States is really starting to recognize that.
Would you talk a little bit about diversity?
Yes.
And the importance thereof?
So that's kind of at the heart, that quickly became kind of the heart of art space, is working in communities and making sure that we're reaching out to creative people and communities that have been disengaged from the rest of the community. And particularly looking at distinct cultural communities that do not have a regular voice within that community and a sense of pride within that community because of the way they've been treated historically. So ArtSpace loves to work with, and this would translate to Kelly, loves to work with culturally distinct communities across the United States and to see if these culturally distinct communities do want to have a place that can celebrate their culture. And for me, it has to also mean not only celebrate their culture, it has to be a learning place where they can teach their kids their rich culture, but also I want it to be a place where they can grow their culture. It doesn't have to stay the same. The traditional cultures should be celebrated and maintained. But then where do they go over the next 100 years? I think that's a riot. I would like art space and our spaces that we create to encourage distinct cultural groups to grow their cultures in new ways. So I'm going to give examples so you can get the breadth of what I'm saying here. In New York City, our first building there was in East Harlem that was distinctly renovated, big old schoolhouse for 90 units of affordable housing for the Puerto Rican community that is in East Harlem in El Barrio. And so I had to work, my employees had to work with that community for about 5 years to get the trust that they said, we want ArtSpace to renovate this because we trust ArtSpace that even though they will own it, they will, we as a people will really own it permanently. And that is working. We were doing the same thing in New Orleans. Just last week, I was in our project in Treme, 100% African-American community, an area of the country that is specifically treasured by the African-American community as a place of power for African-Americans. There we were, after about 5 years of working with different Treme cultural groups. We are the ones chosen to renovate and develop these two massive empty school buildings right in the center of Treme that will represent the future of the African-American people of Treme. We're doing the same thing with the Native Hawaiian community in Honolulu. And I know all of you want to travel with me there next week. That's okay. That's good. I like that. And I'm doing that also with Islamic and Muslim people in Dearborn, Michigan, and working with the Arab American National Museum and making sure they have space in our new project there. And of course, I'm circling around to the joy that I have in working with First Peoples Fund and the Lakota Funds, both here in Rapid City and the Pine Ridge Reservation. Following, we are merely an organization that creates and designs and creates the space that the Oglala Lakota community wants to have in the middle of the Pine Ridge. We are not, that's all we do. We listen carefully, and then we go ahead and respond to create the spaces and make sure it's done right and sustainable so that I can visit it 20 years from now and it will look great. That's my role. You know, I'm very honored to have Mary here, Mary Bordeaux, who's an old friend of mine, and Peter Strong, as well as Anna.
Kelly, when you talk about this 5 years that it takes to have this conversation, to build this trust, the conversations about art, the conversations about community, can you talk a little bit about how over the last 30 years, ArtSpace, you have determined that this type of model is successful and is and brings the community along. And what goes into those 5 years?
Yeah, this might be part of what I call the magic that any human being has. It's a magic that I certainly encourage and talk about with my employees at ArtSpace a lot. And that magic is really based on respect. I think it's probably the biggest word is when the Junebug Theater in New Orleans, which is a civil rights African-American theater, called me to that they really need some space issues and they're in Treme and all this. And I go there, boy, do I have a hat on of just respect and listening and picking up the vibes about what does this community want. Understanding, as with most communities that have been so disadvantaged, is that there is a pushback within the community against any kind of development, and there's a pushback against development that might be led by a white guy from Minnesota, which I totally understand and respect. So what I say often a lot is and with my employees, you cannot be confrontational, but more importantly, you can't be defensive. If someone's really going after you and saying, well, what about this, and I don't see this, and why aren't you doing that, you have to just catch your breath and go, you're probably right. And so let's just talk about that. Let's talk through that. So you start to build trust. Another thing is to make sure that these different leaders of these different cultures come to see our buildings in Council Bluffs, Iowa, or in Santa Cruz, California, whatever is close to them, wherever they're doing their work, and meet the artists there, meet the diverse artists, probably representing in many ways their cultures, and they can talk to them. So this is a way of how you build the style of what ArtSpace does. We spend a lot of time doing that. So if we weren't lucky enough to be getting grants from the National Endowment of the Arts and then by great national foundations like Kresge Foundation and Ford, and also then in all of those communities that I've mentioned, we also get grants, received grants to build the building. We could not spend the time to do that. So fortunately, we do raise the money so that we can take the time. Otherwise, it would hugely alter our business model in a bad way.
What hinders communities, do you think, besides that financial component that you just mentioned, what hinders communities from bringing people together to move forward?
Oh, that's a good one. So I would say, if you know, I put my hat of doing this for 30 years, there are some communities that are, and I'm honestly going to say this, they're just fine. And they, I'm just going to say this, is that they don't need to change. So some just don't. That's really strange. First time I might have ever said that.
But they will change, right?
They probably will.
It will change because time changes.
Because they're, I'm thinking more of smaller communities in Wisconsin and Minnesota, in Texas, Montana. They probably will have to change over time.
Or change will happen to them.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I just want to make sure that I don't want to rush around. Everyone has to change. I think something... resistance to change is natural. By the way, what's really funny, everyone sees me as a change agent, and all my closest friends go, it's so weird because Kelly hates change. I live in the same house that I've been in since I was 7 years old. And yet I see myself as this, you know, world traveler, and oh, I'm all Mr. All over the place, but I race home, you know, the same bed I've been in. So it's kind of pathetic. So I understand not liking change, but change happens. Now, resistance to change in some ways can be really just fine. Just good-hearted people that it's kind of hard to hear the new thing, and they have to be given space and time to change their minds, and they have to be given good reasons why. And I hope that ArtSpace and that my employees are continually being graceful as they're working in El Paso, as we are right now, or in Mesa, Arizona. Places are Gastonia and in Memphis and Chattanooga. These are cities that are hard to do an artist development in because they're not used to this. Yet they invited us in, but the real change that occurs, which has to include the respect and celebration of communities of color, is hard sometimes for these communities. So we take the time. I just want to end that phrase is that, and then what happens in a number of times is people are confronting their own racism, which gets involved in ArtSpace projects because we do celebrate distinct cultures.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask this question instead. Is there anything that you wish you would have known 30 years ago?
I wouldn't be doing this.
But you don't want to
this
do anything
hard.
Else.
Yeah. I know there's a serious question there, but I mean, I try to be honest in these things. Some of you I've told that I applied to be the president, but also meant the janitor of ArtSpace back at 30 years ago because I was the only employee. Didn't realize I wasn't going to be paid for the first 6 months. Weird job. And at the same time, as I was applying to be a ranger in Glacier National Park, because I really wanted to change, and I had spent a lot of my life camping and living in the backcountry. And I knew the rangers, and this is what I wanted to do. And unfortunately, or fortunately, ArtSpace hired me first. I am an integrity guy. And so I said yes to these five sweet arts board members. And then 2 weeks later, my ranger friends called me and said, I passed all the tests of the U.S., whatever it was, Department of Agriculture, and I'm a ranger and everything I want in Montana. I had to say no. So that is the real answer, is that maybe I should have been a ranger.
Or you still could be.
But I probably still will be when I retire at some point. But there were a lot of things. Oh, my gosh. I was so naive. And my terrific board that was called the Young Turks back in the late 80s and early 90s, in Minnesota, we were all so naive. Real estate development is brutal. It's hard, and you come up against some of the ugliest things in human nature when you're doing all that, when you're buying the property and negotiating and just everything. So I've learned a lot about that. I do want to say I've learned a lot about the nature of the artist community, and one thing I want to say to non-artists in the room, they're just like you. That's the big secret answer. And so those... I kind of thought artists were going to be these wonderful people that that would raise their own rents. This is hilarious. The first building that I did back in 1991, the Northern Warehouse was our first building. I said, we aren't raising rents unless you feel we should. And I gave them the legal authority. I created them as a co-op. And a lot of them are friends of mine to this day. They go, wow, was that ever stupid? And so like 3 or 4 years went by. Of course they didn't raise their rents. And then so the the investors and the lenders were saying, well, you're not meeting your bills, and the cost of heating and electricity and everything's going up really fast. You're going into default. And I went to our, I said, no worries. I went to the artist, 52 artist families. I said, okay, you guys, let's pull it together. We got, and they said, no. So I was, wow, I'm learning something now. And so I went door to door. I begged. These were friends of mine. And I got at the co-op vote, 27 votes out of the 52 to raise the rents. And I thought, otherwise they actually were going to be evicted, and they just wanted to put their foot down. They didn't want to raise rents. I mean, I thought, okay, Kelly, you've got to start over on all this, is on how you do this, because artists are just like the rest of us. I don't like paying rent, you know, and so I don't want to have my rent raised, so I'm going to fight it. You know, so it's a good thing to learn.
One of the things you shared last night, so Kelly was gracious enough to come in yesterday, and we were able to spend some time with Sarah Hansel at the city to talk about the master plan, and then we had a group of folks last night for dinner, and we have a coffee after this. But one of the things you shared last night, I think, with the group is one of the first things you did when you took over ArtSpace was begin to replace all the board members that hired you.
Yes. I said to them, they're mostly artists, bless their souls. A lot of them are really close friends of mine to this day. And they agreed. We said, let's bring on our for-profit developers that have good hearts, that will give us clues on how to do this. And let's bring on great real estate attorneys that can help us out and do our first deal. Let's bring on, keep a couple of the original artists that we make sure we maintain the artist's voice on the work that we're doing. Let's bring in some city administrative leaders. So it's very important, continues to be with us. Some folks who knew construction well. We brought all that on the board and said, hey, you guys, you got to let go of all the good hard work you're doing in the greater community, and you have to lend your volunteer advice to ArtSpace so we can get a project done. So that was a good change.
Are you an artist?
Yeah, I usually say no, but the honest is I am. I was brought up as a classical pianist. I used to play concerts in downtown Minneapolis. When I was about 25, I just decided that it made me too nervous. And even though I did go to therapy, I didn't go to therapy about that. So I just thought, let's clear that up too. And so I'm still nervous about playing piano in front of people, but I was telling the friends around the table last night that I do seriously write campfire plays because I camp a lot and I have a lot of friends at camp, and these are fun plays that you all pick a different role and you read these plays around the campfire. And I promise you, every time we do it, whether in Grand Canyon or Yellowstone or Olympic Rainforest, the other campers, little by little, will be gathering around and go, wait, I want to be Diamond Lil, or no, I want to be Bobcat Billy. And so we'll do it again, but that's just for fun. I don't consider that. Well, that is kind of an art.
In the last few years, Rapid City has seen a lot of change. You've seen a lot of change in different communities around the country. What matrix do you use to decide this is successful or not?
Successful, or you mean how do I determine whether a city's moving in the right direction?
How do you decide that the project you the impact that you thought?
Oh, okay. I missed that. Okay, great. So first of all, it means a lot to me when I'm driving. I'm going to put media aside just for a sec, because media is really important. I like to hear in different ways through my communications team that all of our projects, and whatever community it's in, whether it's Brainerd, Minnesota, or wherever, Galveston, Texas, I want to hear that the artists are creating activities that hit the news and that we're a new education program. So that's an important piece. But when I approach the building physically, I want to make sure that I see what's happening around it is what I would consider positive development. Is there more park space? Are there cool, what I call pedestrian-friendly businesses that are gathering around there, such as coffee shops and wine bars or whatever, this cool beer brewery place that I just stopped at yesterday over here.
Hay Camp.
And that kind of thing makes me happy. That means people are engaged. Because remember, those are the places where the artists and the non-artists can meet and talk. And a lot of times those places will put up artwork, as this terrific place has done for Alice Bailey and her work here. But then as I go in the building, there's some really important things. Some of it is intuitive, but we all can be intuitive. Is there a feeling in there in that building that the artists are really creative? Are they friendly with each other? Are they communicating? When you walk in, does it kind of show, like, come up and do this on this floor? And then another thing that's really important to me when you're in the building is that there has to be artwork on the walls. And once I walked into one of my buildings in Maryland, and there was not artwork on the wall, and I was really upset. And I, nice and hi to everyone, but later, because I just had to figure out, my Scandinavian brain takes about a week to kind of go, what's wrong? And I had to be able to go back and say, okay, I think there's something inherently wrong here in Maryland in this particular project, that you don't feel the thrill and excitement to get art on the walls and the hallways. So let's start at the very beginning. So I'm telling you things that I look for. I also, though, look for, I want to make sure that artists from our buildings are on the business council. I want them making business decisions with the business community. I want the business community looking at each other going, wow, these guys aren't so bad. You know, they're really part of our team. It's good. I want the I want them part of the city planning. I want them part of, I want to see them in sports. I want to see kids. I love seeing lots of kids in our buildings. And then I want to make sure the building looks good. Now, that's partially the artist's responsibility to keep it clean and looking right, but it's a lot art space's responsibility to make sure that we've hired a property manager that's done a good job, that the place looks good. Of course, it has to be filled. All of our buildings nationwide are filled, both commercial and residential spaces. And then every once in a while, every 10 years, every 20 years, we have to redo a tuck pointing or put on a new roof or put in a new elevator. All of that is just good building maintenance. So
when you do this work in different communities, you've talked about New York City,
yes.
Twin Cities, you've given in different examples. I would say that that we think we're different here.
And you
in Rapid City.
In a cool way.
And so would this kind of development be different here than in other cities?
I think it should be. I think there would be, be some great things that that an art space type development in Rapid City would follow some basic guidelines. But I do think Rapid City is different. I mean, New Orleans is certainly different. Honolulu is certainly different. Rapid City is different. And there's a so that type of mentality, very open, very embracing mentality that I feel here and I have always felt in Rapid City, would have to be woven into how the building was designed or renovated. For example, this building, just by chance, fits into what I feel about Rapid City. Lots of light. Sorry that we don't have shades, but lots of light is good. In other words, it's not a secret hidden thing. It's Rapid City. It's open. It's light. You want to see the incredible views here. Even the cool separate offices have windows coming out to make sure that they can see what's going on here. This would be, to me, more of a Rapid City. Nice high ceilings. Keep it open because we all want to see those beams and the ironwork. That would be here. I'm going, because I'm a real estate developer, I'm going to building. But I think a lot of times building gives a clue about what's happening inside of what people they are. So there would be and will be different things about Rapid City and the way it's developed.
Can you walk through, you talk about sustainability, and I think it's really interesting, you spoke a little bit about this last night, that the way that you finance your projects is unique.
Yep.
And you've come up with this model and defined, and it's something that, I think a lot of folks look at, a lot of people think nonprofits, we're going to constantly feed those nonprofits the building itself. And what you've come up with is a way that you don't have to feed that. You don't have to continue to provide financial support to keep your projects going. Can you do that quick breakdown of what's the percentage of philanthropic dollars versus already existing government programs?
So I'll pick a project in downtown Seattle, because it's kind of interesting. It's typical in some ways. First of all, we got this really funny plaque from the state of Washington for our first project called the Toshiro Kaplan building in Pioneer Square in Seattle. It's a big building. And we did new construction on top of a beautiful old original building. Seattle, like many cities, is very concerned about historic preservation, so are we. But they loved what we proposed to build on top and approved it. The financing for that building was extremely complex. There were what's called TOD, transit-oriented development dollars in there, because we were built on top of I didn't realize this at first when we were talking about the building, but it's on top of a underground bus line. And then the city transit system is just about a block away. So we're surrounded by transit. So we have TOD dollars from the government. We have housing trust fund. The state of Washington provides Seattle with housing trust fund money if you're doing affordable housing, serving a very low median income, like 40%, 50% of the area median income. So our artists were definitely low income. So that was a lot of the money. We then had a low-income housing tax credits, which I mentioned before. Our art space is really good at using that. We are recognized nationally as being really good about it. We've always, anytime we're awarded those credits across the country, we use them. The states hate it when you hand them back. So we had that. Then about 15%, I would say that the Toshiro Kaplan building in Seattle in those days, this is a long time ago, was probably $20 million. So I would guess about $3 million of that was pure philanthropic dollars from the foundations and individuals of Seattle. By the way, it is pretty hard to race into another city and just say, hey, we're here, and then raise $3 million. Part of the thing that works in that is that what Matt already said, they can look at our other buildings around the country. They can talk to other philanthropists around the country. The city officials go and they definitely talk to the other city officials in other countries and go, you know what, this works. And here's the deal, is that we all have to put the money into this to build this amazing project, this building. But once it's done, art space will never come back to you for money again. It is sustainable on its own. The low rents that the artists pay are enough to pay the bills, pay the reserves, and pay any fees that have to be paid by the project. So those reserves eventually will become what puts on the new roof, you know, 20 years later, or the new boiler 20 years later. I'm saying 20 years, hoping that's the way it should be. So communities like that. When you come in, you put a building that's empty, put it back on the tax rolls. All of our buildings pay taxes. It's pretty much guaranteed to be filled, because all of our buildings nationally are filled. And then, although there is money that goes into the original deal, once we're done, we're done. So everyone loves art space, and we're invited to all the events, but we're not asking for money once the project is done. Now, of course, if a terrific theater moves into our building, theater gives something else. Theater is programmatic. That gives something rich to an audience member who comes to a theater and leaves, and it's a cathartic experience, changed their lives. Theater doesn't, it's next to impossible for good community theater to pay for all its own bills. Theater, I'm picking on it because I love theater, is that it's something that will always have to go out fundraising every year, and one should participate in that. I give money to theaters across the country all the time, because that is something that we need to have. And choosing that, it could be dance, it could be a lot of other things. But art space as a nonprofit arts real estate organization does not need to come back again and again for money from the community once we've done our building. I will say that that building in the state of Washington, we got this award saying that we used the most levels and layers of financing that they had ever seen in their life, period.
And it worked.
And it worked. And that was 15 years ago, and it's great. It works beautifully.
Kelly, as Sarah shared with us yesterday, the plan for Rapid City, the Rapid City Master Plan is underway. In your opinion, what is the most important element of creating a successful plan for a city?
So I have just simple, but should be a simple response, just communication and community involvement. And I think Sarah is just terrific at that, by the way. And I'm not saying everything's right in Rapid City, but I just think, boy, the right type of conversations are occurring. It has to be deep community engagement. And also, I'm going to add this, making sure you reach out to disadvantaged communities that might not be normally part of the conversation. Reach out and make different people of color feel comfortable, and give them a space and allow them to say what their needs are in any sort of development as well. That's how you really plan for something that will last a long time.
Kelly, we just have a few more minutes.
Whitney Houston.
Okay. If you didn't hear what he just said.
No.
He can share it.
No.
But before you...
I can sing, but I was playing
we'll
a joke.
End on Whitney
I can
Houston.
Sing, but I'm not going to sing.
But what are the things we wanted to make sure to ask, state, get feedback, is you took an advocacy nonprofit with a budget, I think you said, of $20,000
a year.
30 years ago.
Yeah.
And you've created something that has $800 million in assets.
Yeah.
That houses how many?
So we have over 2,500 artists in our living in our buildings across the U.S., and then we have over 2 million square feet of non-residential space used by the community.
An annual budget of $20 million mm-hmm. and 90-plus employees, mm-hmm. and you're really happy.
Oh, yeah, it is.
It's and anyone that spends a few minutes with you can tell that.
That's nice.
And so many people that do this type of work that come into so many hurdles have to deal with the city, have to deal with contractors, have to deal with designing, all these things. You seem to be always optimistic and positive. Where does that come from?
Naive.
Naive.
Scandinavia. I don't know. I blame everything on Scandinavia. I don't know. But I can be assured that if my colleagues in art space lose heart and become negative or, of course, by the way, we all get depressed and we all have times of doubt and deep fears. But overall, if you aren't willing to go in for the charge and if you don't feel the passion about the mission of what you're doing for communities and how you are changing communities for the better, if you don't feel that, you can't work at ArtSpace, that's for sure, because you wouldn't. You don't get paid enough. It's a nonprofit. So that sense of joy, though, is deepened by the responses we now get in communities across the United States where we have done our work. It's really great to go back to the buildings and talk with the artists and then talk with the city administrators, talk with the shop owners around our buildings, and boy, can you feel good. And then also a lot of times in the process of a project, you can talk to your colleagues, and people feel really charged up. It's hard. Real estate development, especially community-based nonprofit real estate development, is really hard because, remember, we don't have a lot of money. I can't say I'm going to solve this. All right, here's the $5 million. No, I have to go, okay, we need $5 million. How do we do that? There are times of great sadness and pain at Art Space in when we get huge setbacks. I'm so happy to say last week I was in New Orleans. It's just a gigantic festival. The mayor gave a great speech, and then the Mardi Gras Indians celebrated, and and it was just a Treme celebration. It was life-changing for me. It was so great. But we all pleasantly forgot that about a year and a half ago, by a strange Louisiana law, that even though we had site control of these two big old school buildings, by Louisiana law, a charter school, if we hadn't started the renovation, a charter school could go in and take the buildings, and they had 90 days to prove that they could renovate it and use it. Well, I had already raised about, between government and private dollars, about $35 million out of the $45 million that project took. I had that money, but all of a sudden, a charter school had it. And that was it. We weren't even allowed on the property. This is a year and a half ago. Worse yet, I had to call the presidents of the Ford Foundation, the Kresge Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Greater New Orleans Foundation, an art place. Some of you probably heard of them because they have all invested in, oh, and the Bloomberg Foundation. This was just a great day, calling all these presidents and shamefully saying, I don't have control of this building that you gave me a couple million dollars for each. You know, the money's there. And I say, first of all, you just want your money back. And they go, well, not really. What's your plan? Because a lot of people have faith in art space. I said, my faith is that we're going to get this building back and it's going to be done nicely. We are not going to have a lawsuit. I don't believe in that. We're not going to have a fight. I am going to convince this charter school to get a different spot. Well, I had good help. The president of the Ford Foundation, Darren Walker, decided he was going to be my partner. And so he flew in and talked with the mayor of New Orleans. But I got to know the president of that charter school. I personally flew around the country, got to know different people working in the charter school, and convinced them, along with the mayor of New Orleans, to take a different spot, and they did. But I can assure you there are down times, as there is in anyone's life, on any of the great things you do. And if there isn't some pain, this is so Scandinavian, then it's not worth it. Skip that one. That's just a Kellyism.
I think something else that's really interesting in the way that you speak in, about the growth of the last three decades is you did it. You were the janitor and the president.
Yeah, I was the janitor and the president. Yeah.
You changed your board by explaining why that was important and made those changes. You took on your first project, and I know there's a great story with some of these projects, and you just kept with it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something else when I think of our conversations in the past, that's something that I think about a lot, is that you set a goal and you bring the people around and you just keep doing it. One of the things that you set a goal to do was to save a building that got you in the Guinness Book of World Records. In the last couple minutes, will you give us a brief explanation of what that is?
Boy. Yes.
Please.
In downtown Minneapolis, this was in the year 1999, the city of Minneapolis determined that they were going to tear down the oldest standing theater in the city of Minneapolis. It was built in 1905 and by the Schubert family, S-H-U-B-E-R-T, that built a number of theaters across the United States. It's a two-balcony, gorgeous classical theater built in downtown Minneapolis to bring classical theater to the throngs of Scandinavians and Germans coming in. And it was gorgeous theater. It was empty for the last 30 years, and the city just thought, we're tearing it down because we're putting this awful development there. Generally, I agree with the city, but this was horrible. So I thought, well, I Art Space already owned this beautiful Masonic temple that was filled with a lot of thriving nonprofit arts organizations, mostly dance companies, because Masonic temples have all that extra space in it, which is really cool. And so I went to the city council and said, why don't we pick up and move this great classical theater that was building, the Schubert building that was three blocks away, that was empty, and rather than tearing it down, it's on the National Register, it is a national landmark, it's everything. Why don't we, instead of you, city, having a big lawsuit with all of the historic groups across the country, why don't you move that over next to a building I already have all this dance energy going in, kind of close to it. I'll build what I call an infill or an atrium building between the two. I'll totally renovate the old Schubert into a home for dance, and you'll have an entirely new dance, or I should say an art center, right in downtown Minneapolis on 6th and Hennepin. When I look back, even saying this just makes me sweat. Like, what a weird thing. And so I did go ahead and argued alone in front of, this was really my project. My board voted unanimously, yes, but this was Kelly. And so I went to the city council to ask for $4.5 million. Would they move the building? Just by the way, they said yes, and then that afternoon the mayor vetoed it. So there's a way in Minneapolis, as I suppose there is anywhere, where you can override a mayor's veto. So why did I? The mayor is a friend of mine. So I did go back and got a couple more council members to sign up. We overrode the mayor's veto. The building was picked up and moved on these little rubber tire deals. We used all available little, by the way, I'm not an engineer mechanic, my employees would murder me right now, but I don't know the right words to say, but these all these little rubber-tired pivotal deals picked up the building, they call it crack the building from its original piece, and moved the entire theater for, it took about 4 or 5 days, 3 blocks over next to this very beautiful theater, by the way, and placed it facing Hennepin instead of facing another streetway over there. And left 50 feet between that and my 8-story Masonic temple building that I already owned. And there it sat. I'm sure that Peter and Mary, you saw. Yes, you saw. We danced there, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So there we go, that all of a sudden it's sitting there, and it was really Kelly's boondoggle. I mean, some of the finance and commerce magazines said Kelly's boondoggle is the title. It was really, really hard. And by the way, what we're talking about very respectfully last night, Pepper and I, about that, dance is a very hard discipline to raise money for, especially because I had to get about $15 million in state bonding dollars from, as I got to know my own state better. Minneapolis and St. Paul are very progressive. The rest of the state is hard-working folks that don't have dance at the top of their minds. You know, fair enough. So I had to travel to all these different communities across the state by really cool programs that I described last night of bringing real-time teaching dance into the schools of northern Minnesota. I ended up getting votes, got all that money. Then the city of Minneapolis said, we really like this, put in some more money. And then it really was individual donors. About 15 families gave $1 million or $2 million each to this effort. So that's why so many parts of the whole complex are named after families in the Twin Cities that decided they wanted this home for dance done. So it is, it's done, it's beautiful, it operates in the black. It's a $3 million, I'm the chair of the board, it's a $3 million annual budget. It features dance companies from all over Minnesota and sometimes nationally, and it's always full, it's a blast, and it did get the, we have a plaque from Guinness World Records that is the largest building ever moved on rubber tires. So that is that. That's crazy. But it works.
Kelly, before we close, I just want to let everybody know that in May, we're going to take Morning Phillip to the Bush Connect event in the Twin Cities, sponsored by the Bush Foundation. We'll be interviewing Jen Ford Reedy.
That's great.
Bad Bad Hats, an indie band from the Twin Cities, will be here on Saturday. So if you want to join on Saturday, get your tickets. And a concluding thought that I wanted to share was, I know you play the piano, you write campfire plays. It seems to me that the work that you've done over the last 30 years, you've taken a creative approach to it. You've been really open to change and trying different things. You set visions and seen possibilities. Your way of interacting, that optimism that you can create something. And what I think so many people would say is your selflessness and execution. These five elements seem to be also what make up art, and that you have found a way to do this, to create art in what you do every day.
Wow, that's very kind.
Thank you for making the time to come here and spend some time in the city and this morning. Really appreciate what you do and the impact that you have.
Great.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you all.
I almost forgot. We have a piece of artwork from Casey Puyer from Susie Kappa Art Center down the road that we would like to provide to you.
That's wonderful. Well, I'm very, very honored. Thank you so much. Gosh, wonderful. This will definitely go right in my office with a little plaque right next to it. So that means a lot to me. Thank you all.
Thanks,
very, very kind, everyone. and have a great day in this beautiful city.